Welcome back to another episode of Straight to the Point. Today, I'm really, really excited to have on a friend that I actually haven't seen for a while. We were just discussing the fact that it's been over a year, I think, since we last spoke. We actually met. It's another one of the masterminders that I've met at my previous mentors' events that he used to run, and kind of tapping into all the resources and contacts of this podcast these days, because we've got to know some really, really cool people. He is a digital marketing expert. He has authored so many books, I don't even know how to name them all these days, looking at what he's done. Founder of Exposure Ninja, Tim Cameron Kitchen. Welcome to the Straight to the Point podcast.
Thanks, Chris. Excited to be here.
And say, how are things going, mate? How's business been for the last few months? I know it's been a while since we properly spoke.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I think everyone who's been through a pandemic has, you know, when you say how's business, they're like, wow, it's interesting. So like many businesses, we saw huge drop off immediately with digital marketing clients in April. And then by June, we'd pick them all back up. And we're now, this is going to be our biggest year by quite some margin. And we're just growing every month at the moment still. So it's been amazing. Kind of feel like, you know, when you've been surfing and I'm not a very good surfer, so my experience of surfing is basically getting pummeled by wave after wave after wave. And then when you get back to the beach, you're like, whew, wow, that was an experience. And I kind of feel like that the whole time at the moment.
Okay, and literally, I think it's probably one of the best ways to sum up the past 6 to 12 months. I mean, you go surfing, I go roller coaster. I could get picked up on how I say that, flipping way, it's so stupid. I can't say it, I'm rubbish. I mean, obviously, I know what you do, mate, but for everybody else that's listening, what is it that Exposure Ninja does? What do you specialize in? And how have you kind of got to where you are today?
Yeah, so Exposure Ninja is a digital marketing agency. We build websites for SMEs and we generate leads to those by doing SEO, content marketing, pay-per-click advertising, social media, email marketing, and conversion optimization. There's a team of 100, or actually slightly more than 100 of us now. And how did we get here? Well, I was a professional drummer in 2010, I think. And by professional, I mean I wasn't earning money doing anything else. That was an interesting time and taught me a lot. I got talking to my next door neighbor who was a plasterer and ended up building him a website, which completely changed his life. And seeing that experience, I was like, well, forget the drumming. This is really fun, really rewarding. Let's go all in on that. So started building some websites for tradesmen, did, I don't know, 50 to 100 of them back in 2011, 2012, and then wrote a book about what I was doing to get them ranked on Google. I called the book How to Get to the Top of Google. Which really took off and started generating me more leads than I could handle myself. So I started building a small freelance team and then eventually built Exposure Ninja. I think we started late 2012, early 2013. It's been a roller coaster ever since.
I think everybody else will probably agree with me listening to that, how easy he makes it sound. Oh yeah, we just did this. We just did that. And suddenly we've got a team of, how many people have you recruited in your team now?
I don't know how many people we've had over the years. Let me just check how many we're on now. I think we're probably just over 100.
It's that many.
We're 101.
101. Good work. Yeah. So, Tim, like something that I know about obviously your business is that you were ahead of the game with remote working, right? I know this is a random question. It wasn't one I was going to ask, but 101 people remote working. Like, how on earth does that work?
How on earth? Yeah, good question. We started off being remote and for a while, like it was pretty standard small team. We were probably, I don't know, back in late 2013, we got to maybe 10 or so people in our first year. And it had all been through working online. We were communicating over Skype. So we were talking through Skype, absolute nightmare. All our tools and everything were project management. Online stuff was fine, but it was ropey. And I remember talking to someone who I really respected at the time and said, look, the business is growing. It's time that you guys like go legit. Like you need to start taking this a little bit seriously. And basically go legit meant get an office. So I was like, okay, if that's what we need to do, then that's what we will do. So we looked at a map of the UK. Where's the middle? Pretty central. Central. We had a couple of salespeople in Nottingham as well. So I'm like, right, Exposure Ninja is going to Nottingham. So we found an office space. I rented a place, literally the house that was closest to the office. And off we went. I'd actually only ever been to Nottingham once at this point, and I hadn't really done much research, but it was on the M1, so happy days. And we started off working in the office, and it really, really didn't suit us. It just, the amount of time that was wasted, like from people just asking random questions and from just idle chit chat, we'd have clients come in and, you know, it'd be a 3-hour meeting, whereas previously it would have been a 10-minute Skype call or whatever, because it felt like they had to justify, you know, being here, and we have felt like we had to be hospitable, I guess. So we binned the office after 6 months, signed a 5-year lease though. So yeah, just finished paying for that. But yeah, it just really didn't work for us. And remote is kind of our DNA, and it always has been. So how do we cope? Honestly, I when I look at people with 100 people in a physical office, I'm like, I don't know how you would do that. I don't know how you would get anything done all day. Surely the questions and the people lining up and stuff would be an absolute nightmare. So because it's our DNA, I don't really know how the opposite. So but I do know that we have, you know, we've got strict controls over everything that's being done. We're so process oriented. Everything that we do is from a process. There's task lists which people track time against, so we know exactly where the efficiencies are. We map everyone's utilization really closely. Like, we're a very well-developed organization for our size, and I guess that's because we've had to be. You have to kind of make up for the lack of in-person contact with organization and processes. So yeah, I don't know how we've done it, but I know that having organized, operationally focused people in the business has been a really big part of that.
It's fascinating. So then you did it. I mean, you said 2012, you said you started, didn't you, in terms of what you've been doing? Like, in terms of like the speed at which you took people on, like, what was that acceleration period? Was it 100 all at once? Was it 10 initially in the first year? How did it kind of work?
I can't remember 100%, but I think we must have been around 10, or maybe like 8 to 10 in the first year. And then we grew kind of steadily. I think by 20, I want to say by like 2018, we had maybe 60 people. And then 2018, we had a really big year, and we grew to maybe 90 people that year. And then since like late 2019 or early 2020, we've been around about 100 ever since, really. But we're just focusing on getting more out of people as well, rather than just continuing to grow. Because as you start growing size, you have to grow infrastructure, and infrastructure, another word for that is overhead. So it just becomes less and less efficient as you go through these like transition points, don't you? So from 0 to 10, like 10 to 15 people, I call a sweet spot of hell, because you're directly managing too many people. You don't necessarily justify having managers yet, so you're having to kind of directly oversee people. Then you start getting managers in place and things chill down a little bit. But then you get to like 50, 60 people, and then for us, like, we had to get things like HR and more a better finance structure and more operations stuff built into the company to kind of facilitate the next level. So you're always going through these like these kind of cycles where you plateau, you need to build a bunch more overhead and then get to the next level. So we've been focused over the last couple of years of kind of getting more out of our existing structure rather than building more people, because we kind of invested in that stuff earlier than we needed to.
I find it fascinating, mate, because like one of the things I remember when we were kind of getting to know each other at the mastermind events and stuff was that like finding business was never an issue from what it seemed like with your growth period. It was always like more people taking on. Whereas what I hear a lot of people talking about is we need more business to be able to even think about people. How have you done that? And I don't want to say easy, because I'm not really going to lay the fact that it's been easy to do, but how have you kind of gone about that? Because that's a challenge that I know a lot of people struggle with.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. And I'm in a group with a bunch of marketing agencies, and they're all like, we need more business, we need more clients. Like, you're a marketing agency. if a marketing agency doesn't have more leads than it can handle, then something is wrong. So how we've done it, we've had I guess we've always been focused on building assets that drive leads. So the first asset we ever had was the Google book, right? How to get to the top of Google. Started driving us leads in 2012, and it's been a decent source of leads ever since. It's tailed off a bit in the early days. It was absolutely mad because it was one of the only SEO books, and it was by far the best selling SEO book there was. So that was amazing. And then sort of 2014, we were like, okay, we probably shouldn't just be reliant on one sort of lead. So we need to start getting some other sorts of leads. So we started doing our own digital marketing, and we finally optimized our website and got it ranking and started running ads. So we've done a lot of that, and we get a lot of leads through our website because it ranks well and because we eat our own dog food. We also do quite a lot on YouTube. So YouTube's becoming a bigger channel for us. We've been investing in that since probably properly since 2019. So
when you say investing, is that ads? When you say investing,
I mean, well, investing time. Time and money, because YouTube's it's not like Instagram stories. All you need is your phone. YouTube is a higher barrier to entry. So one of my key marketing responsibilities in the business is writing. I'm doing less of the writing, but mostly writing and scripting and filming the videos and then having people edit them. But that YouTube is a slog. Like, it is a slog. We're getting about 10% subscriber increase every month, so it's a very scalable slog, and the graph is very encouraging, but particularly in the early days it is a slog because it doesn't feel like you're getting much back from it. But that now is a really strong source of leads for us. So I guess we've always been looking at what are the assets that we can build where you'll do something once, like a book, like a really high ranking blog post, or like a YouTube video. And then that can be a source of leads like over time, because that's what we've seen work for our fastest growing clients. So yeah, I guess that's the kind of big picture answer to how we've always had more business than we can handle.
Yeah, I think you make a fascinating point, actually, with marketing agencies in general. And if they don't have enough business, kind of, what are they doing, so to speak? I mean, for some reason, I've never really thought about it that way, but actually, it's completely another common sense. It's like, if you don't have what it says that you're doing, surely what you're doing isn't as effective as what you're potentially portraying it to be.
Yeah, and there's definitely like a shoemaker's shoes thing, right? So until 2014, we haven't really worked on our own SEO, but we were doing SEO for clients very successfully. So there was definitely a part that, we just couldn't justify it because we were so busy with clients. But it gets to a point where a client's like, well, if I'm paying you to do this thing and you're not doing it, or you are doing it, but it's not really working for you, then that's a really difficult sales position to be in. So yeah, I think I was talking to a branding agency yesterday that were considering a rebrand and really kind of stuck in that, and I'm thinking, you're a branding agency. If you can't answer that question, then I don't know what's going on. Maybe that's probably something I'm not getting. That's frequently the case.
Honestly, it's quite fresh, it's like a breath of fresh air hearing it, because the amount of marketing agencies that we come up at Gramication and Pipeline 44 with what we're kind of going at the moment, obviously we look at it from a slightly different angle with like personal branding, with the way that we're kind of going at it. So to see kind of what you've been able to do, and it's just like the proof's in the pudding, so to speak, isn't it? It's like, look what our growth has been like. Just do what we do and you'll get similar results in a different industry, different niche, because the strategy. So I think, it's a massive proof of concept, right? And I think one of the things that you mentioned was the power of assets. So building, and that's something that we've not really spoken about before, actually. But when I started to look into, the first time we did a podcast, I was like brand new, and I just wanted to come have a chat with you more than anything. Whereas this time, I'm going to do some research.
Don't want to have a chat with you, just want to extract.
I'm going to pull out every single piece of information I possibly can for you guys. So I hope you damn appreciate it. But like, in terms of like those assets, and the book was something which, looking into your story, that was big for you, right? Like how to get to the top of Google. What led you to do that? Like, what was the ink? Because that wasn't a massive thing for me back then, thinking that. But what triggered you to go away and do that sort of thing?
The main thing was, it wasn't a business generation strategy at the start. I was talking to plumbers and electricians all day about the internet. And the stuff that they were telling me back in 2012 was rubbish. Like, they were getting their knowledge from a Yell salesperson who knew, the only person who knew less about the internet than the tradespeople were the Yell salespeople. And they were just selling whatever they needed to get that money. And some of the stuff that they were coming up with around SEO was so far from, so I was thinking, like, how can this be so? Like, what is going on here? And I started looking for like reliable sources of SEO. The problem was that the information that was out there in that time, it was either super technical, like Moz, Whiteboard Fridays and all that type of stuff, which for the average tradesperson is completely pointless. Like nothing will turn them off faster than that. Or it was utter rubbish peddled by a salesperson. So I thought, well, let's just write a book which just literally explains the process about how to write and rank a website, any website in any niche, doesn't matter, just the principles of what gets ranking on Google. And then when I'm talking to Bob the roofer from Croydon, I can say, forgive me, Bob, let me just send you this book. It's going to explain this thing that, you know, this thing that we're talking about. So yeah, that was the honest originator of the idea. And then once I published it, it started to get a bit of traction. It started to generate some leads. And I thought, hold on, like this actually is a thing. Because my initial thought was, I'm going to tell people everything that I know. These people aren't going to be customers. They're just going to go and do it. And probably 90% of people who read the book just go and do it. And if you read the Amazon reviews, I've just had some emails just now from people who say, I've just followed the book, ranking my website, happy days. So that's probably 90% of people. But then there's the rest that are like, we need help with this. Once you show them everything that it takes to do this, well, you will have found this. They're like, forget that. Like, obviously this guy knows what he's talking about, but I'm never going to have time to do that. And that's Exposure Ninja. So we've just grown. In the early days, it was all that. Like, we were just handling the book leads that didn't want to do this stuff themselves.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating, right? Because I've just been in the middle of writing my book. So that in terms of the way that content works, it's taken me so long to try and really work out what I'm doing with it, right? It's something that sounds so easy. Go and write a book. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, it's a lot to writing a book. It sounds like absolutely crazy. Yeah. Like, I'd rather do a video and just speak freely sort of thing, right? I mean, have you, in terms of authoring, did you ever think about the video side of things? Because I know you've done other stuff, but back then, was video just not really a big thing?
No, back in these times, back in the olden days of the internet, you know, YouTube was... We did do videos. There are videos out there from Exposure Ninja in like 2013, but they are rubbish. And it just wasn't, people were still using books for their information about the internet. As crazy as that sounds, like, this was pre-Instagram video. This was like the olden days where people were going to like buy paperback books. Video we started doing, 2014 or something, and I got fully into like gear and camera stuff in 2018, and that's when we really started all in with video. And right now we're planning another book, but we've kind of moved most of our stuff into video and podcasts and stuff like that, because that's just where most people spend their time these days. The book is great because writing a book helps you organize your thoughts, gives you a thesis. There's something about going through the orderly process of, you know, writing the book, working out what the chapters are, collecting the case studies, collecting the information. That's really useful. And I think that's a good way of defining how you feel about a topic. But I know the impact that our books have had on our business nowadays is nowhere near what they used to. We'd use them more as a kind of a middle of the funnel tool to help people and to build credibility, rather than so much as a lead generation tool.
I think that's a really, really cool, like really, really powerful word, actually. Credibility, it's a positioning tool, right? It's kind of how I've always seen it, because authority links really, really well with personal branding. And a lot of the people that listen to the show are all about leveraging personal brand as much as possible. And I've seen you put a lot of time into your personal brand, as much as like memorable Exposure Ninja is. I remember it exactly the way I think that you want it to be remembered, but I also now see you putting a lot of time and effort into stuff. And even back then, it seemed, even though I didn't know you back then, it seemed to be that personal branding was something that has just been something that you've done. Am I right, or is that something that's kind of developed over the years?
Yeah, I don't know, because I don't see that much of what I do as necessarily personal brand. I see a lot of the Exposure Ninja brand is me. Like, I'll be the face in the video, I'll be the person on the podcast, because I have a relationship with our audience and people feel like they know me. So it makes sense to have, you know, I get people sending emails like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you just replied. Like, I'm like, you know, it's repetition. Like, they watch 50 videos, then all of a sudden I'm something to them. So that's the angle that I've put loads of time into. Whereas my own social channels and, you know, doing stuff on LinkedIn, I often find that stuff really difficult to justify the time on, because I'm so busy, like, in Exposure Ninja. So, and Exposure Ninja has so much leverage with our brand and with our visibility. So the YouTube videos that I do for Exposure Ninja, I spend about a day a week on that. And then my own personal branding stuff, it's like, it might be 20 minutes one evening while I'm watching the T20, but it's most of the Tim stuff that is out there is wrapped in Exposure Ninja. It's Exposure Ninja stuff rather than Tim Cameron Kitchen stuff, which I don't know. I'm very happy with that. I don't chase, like, I'm not interested in being, I don't mind being the figurehead, but I'll be the figurehead to serve the business. Like, it's for the service of the business. I'm not attached to me being, like, well known or anything like that.
Listen, right, like 12 months ago you asked me this question, different response. I'd be like, personal brand. But the way that you've done it, I actually think it's the way that I'm going with it. Like, Really? Communication, the way that we're growing. Because it's nice being known, right? And there's other thought leaders that are out there. Like, I mean, immediate ones in the digital marketing space, Gary Vaynerchuk, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of business owners do this, and especially in the expert world, in the specialist world, in that consultancy role. I think when you go solely in personal brand and you forget business brand, you actually find yourself trapped where you can't actually pull away. And then suddenly when you want to hire a team, like, no, I want to work with you.
Yeah.
And I experienced it, like, definitely. And for me now, it's like I'm transitioning to something very similar to you, where it's like the podcast is straight to the point by Bramication. There's actually no Chris Taylor going to be a part of it. I'm just the host. I'm just one of the hosts. I'm going to bring in somebody else and they're going to host it with me. And the thing that is the big challenge is that people want Chris Taylor, and I'm assuming that people still want the author of How to Get to the Top of Google. They still want to speak to you because it's that star effect, but it's a complementary thing rather than the only way to do it, if that makes sense. So I think the way that you've done it is genius in a way, because
Well, I'd love to say it was intentional. Honestly, it's just I haven't really had the time to do the personal stuff. But yeah, I think you're spot on. And where, for me, the thing that's made the difference, like, people don't come into Exposure Ninja on the whole wanting Tim anymore, because when I'm sharing stuff or when I'm writing the book, I'm talking not about, this is what I did, this is what I think you need to do. It's like, this is what the team did. This is us. So it's much more like when you go on a Virgin Atlantic flight, you're not expecting Richard Branson in the cockpit, right? You kind of know that he's not going to be there. And he's done that through positioning of the business and championing the business as a whole. I think personal branding can really hold, like in our space, personal branding can really hold some businesses back, as well as being a force for growth, when the owner becomes, you know, I will never let the brand become bigger than me. And it's like the crabs climbing out of the bucket thing. They're so attached to being the face of it. So I'm very happy for Exposure Ninja to become generic. And as soon as the Tim face to it is no longer contributing more than it's holding us back, I know the team will rip me down and chuck me out. And that's absolutely fine. That's how it should be. One day it will outgrow me. But until then, I am just an asset to be used. Just sweat the asset. Just use him. I'm here to do what needs to be done. Just point me in the right direction and off I go. So there's no, like, emotion to it. There's no ego to it. It's just, I am just a TV presenter. I'm the TV presenter for Exposure Ninja.
I think it's a solid strategy, and I think more people, especially in the development of my content, it's something that I'm going to be talking about a lot more in this playing that supporting role. What I'm waiting for, mate, is the time. I don't know if you've done this already, but that ninja to become an actual character in videos, actually starting to participate in some stuff, because I've seen a lot of companies do it with these they call them NFTs and stuff, don't they? What's going on? But what have you thought about it? Have you thought about bringing it into life?
We're going to have some merch. We have merch internally. It's called Shinobi. It's not he or she. It's ageless, it's genderless, it's raceless. And I freaking love it. One of our designers came up with the original. There was an older version of the ninja, which didn't look as friendly, but this one's super versatile. We've got them in loads and loads of different formats, poses. We have merch internally, so when people have a Ninjaversary or their Ninja of the Month or something, we'll send them a piece of ninja merch, and the reaction it gets is mental. So I think at some point we'll have merch. As for are we going to sell NFTs, I don't know. I think some people have overhyped NFTs to the stage that, I don't know, I think there are other things to focus on with that time and energy, let's say.
I think it's amusing to see how the market goes. I've got an interview coming up with somebody that is like all in on them, so we'll soon see what. And I laugh at him like I laugh at everybody else, and it's going to be a good conversation because he is like so all in on them. And I mean, fair play, like if you can make it work, so to speak. It'd be interesting to see.
We'll either look like, it's one of those, like, who knows where it's going to go? Something's going to happen. Will it be what it is in its current format? Will it be something else? Nobody knows. It's a total guess at this stage. So fair play to the people that are willing to go all in. I admire your risk profile.
Definitely, mate. I mean, obviously, you're exposed a lot with the digital marketing space, with what's working, what's not working. I mean, where is your attention at the moment? If you were helping a business right now, like let's go, I guess it's not a complete startup, but someone that is generating business, kind of where is the attention? Where should it kind of be applied, do you think, these days?
Yeah, we've been kind of expecting a decline in search for a long time, and it hasn't happened. Search, Google, fair play. They are still there. They are still a really powerful, really strong source of really highly qualified traffic. So for most of our clients, being found by people who are searching for exactly what they do or the problem that they solve is still the most profitable marketing space to take up online. Some really interesting stuff has happened over the last year, right? Obviously, e-commerce has been, e-commerce, to call it a trend is to kind of undersell it a little bit, but it's been the way that things are going for some time. And then since 2020 and since lockdown, cost per click on shopping ads, cost per click on social ads, everything is going up. Combine that with really interesting stuff like around iOS 14.5 and privacy and loss of cookies across iOS and Android. I think we're going to enter a really interesting time. And honestly, I don't know where it's going to go. We as advertisers and marketers have to get used to either a world with significantly less data, in which case I think we'll see a return to the traditional values in marketing, which I'm a massive advocate and fan of, and I really hope it goes that way. Weirdly, as a digital marketer, I hope we get less data. I hope we rely less on automatically generated audiences built from algorithms. I really hope we go away from that, because I think it'll allow the best marketers to win rather than the businesses with the largest budgets. Or we'll go towards a different type of data, and someone's going to come up with a way of just removing the limitations that these privacy things are causing us. But yeah, I think either way, the thing that is going to win is going to be a business and a marketing manager understanding the target audience and understanding their drivers. I think loads of where digital marketing has gone over the last few years has been towards automatically created audiences through lookalikes. It's been through pixeling. It's been through even automatic, like dynamic search ads, where we don't even have to write the ads anymore. Like everything has been going towards automation. And the problem with that is, if you look at a lot of marketing, whether it's digital marketing or even traditional marketing now, you look at a lot of marketing that's happening and it's so bland. It's so, the content is so secondary to the media. Everyone focuses on Facebook ads. Like, what's the technicality behind the Facebook ad works, how it works? And nobody's thinking, what's the creative? What's the message that we're giving people? What's the driver that makes somebody purchase? That's been all swept aside as we get carried away with algorithms and think that it's all about data. And I'm really hoping that we go back to a time where, marketers will be running research and they'll be running studies before running ads, rather than just pumping out 50 iterations of crap and then picking the two which are slightly less crap than the rest. I really hope we get back to that time of sitting in front of someone saying, you know, what makes you purchase? Why did you choose this? What are the objections that you have that weren't answered by this website? Because I think that's where we'll win. And the great news about that is we don't rely on any particular channel. We don't rely on any particular strategy or access to data. That works as well in a magazine as it does in a sales call, as it does on Facebook. So yeah, I think there's so much uncertainty with digital marketing and the particular channels. As marketers, we can just go back to the basics. What makes people purchase? What is it about this business? What are the things that we need to tell someone about this business to make them want it? And what's the next step we need to give them, which is a slippery slide towards purchase? As long as we're doing that, whatever tools we have, we're going to be absolutely fine.
I think, like I say, you've hit the nail on the head with like marketing versus lead generation and marketing versus brand. And I think brand is the thing that's going to stand out. The stories that these businesses are saying and telling online is what connects them really to their ideal target market. I think we've almost become emotionless in the way that we market. A lot of businesses have become detached from, like you say, their end user, the customer, the person that keeps the lights on, and actually are more about looking at the cost per click and looking at the data that sits behind it, determine what actually is a good ad and what isn't. Well, actually, The best ad is the one that generates the longest serving customer that buys into your methodology and your process over and over again. But somehow that data seems to be ignored. And it just baffles me, so to speak, really.
Well, I think it's because there is very little data around it, or it's very difficult to come up with that data. What we've got to remember is that whatever ad platform you're using has been designed to make you spend more money. So, you know, whether it's Google Ads being generous with its attribution about how many leads it's driving for you, or, you know, all the ad platforms do that. So they are all optimized to make it easy to advertise and to encourage you to do more. So they present the information because they're incentivized to do it. Who is incentivized to go and find out what the pain points are for the best customers that you've ever had? Nobody. That's a hard, annoying, boring task that nobody wants to do. And therefore, we just naturally gravitate to, well, just show me a dashboard. Great. Looks like if we put another 20 quid in there, that goes up. Great. Let's just do some more of that. So I think it's inevitable that that's how things have gone. And I'm hoping that when the data, you know, we get less reliable data from Facebook, we get less reliable audiences from Facebook since February, since these changes started coming out. So I'm hoping what this will lead to is people using Facebook as one source of information, but actually using common sense and talking to their sales team as another source. And then these are just sources that we combine to give us an understanding of what's happening, rather than saying, like you said, right, what's a good ad? That one. Okay, let's just put more money in that. Facebook's telling me I need to increase my CPC and my daily budget. Great, let's just do that. Like, sometimes there's no thought about what happens. There's no thought about the marketing funnel. Every day we are sent websites that are rubbish, and the person is saying, we're spending 10 a day on Facebook. How do we get a better CPA? And it's like, all they're focused on is going into the Facebook ad manager. They haven't had a look at their website and gone, hold on, this is rubbish. Like, we haven't talked to anyone to say, why would you buy from a dropshipping site that sells headphones for more expensive than Amazon, as well as perfume and men's hoodies? Like, that thinking just doesn't go on because they're so obsessed by the channel. It's crack cocaine for people.
I think it's you touched on a really subject that I could go off for about half an hour on, I reckon, in terms of that. Because for me, I deal with it every single day, like every day, that argument of rather than what it is that you're saying. And don't get me wrong, data is important. I get it. It's what we have to measure. However, there's another thing at play here, and it's the way that people emotionally react to things and the way that a message sticks. So even if they may see an ad, and if it's an ad that is so blunt, really, really doesn't connect with them, it can actually have the adverse effect rather than the effect that you actually want it to have. And yes, you only look at the stuff that you've gained. You never look at the stuff that you've lost. And that, for me, is where the disconnect is. And okay, yes, it's difficult to prove, but it's just almost opening up that conversation with people to make them realize that there is possibility here to widen everything that you do if you just look at the words that you're saying, or the video that you're creating, or the message that you're actually putting out there. Because 9 times out of 10, these boards, like these people that sit on the board of directors in this current moment, they have no idea what the company's saying. They literally have, like, the thing that the marketing team, the thing that the sales team, and the thing that the leadership team think that they're saying are all different. And that, for me, is where there's a big, big subdivide between businesses right now. Yeah, I can go on my soapbox all day and talk about that one, mate. It drives me insane. But, I mean, moving into, like, the quickfire round then, mate.
Yeah.
Obviously, your thing originally was websites. Like, how important are websites? What are some things that people need to look at to improve their website?
Yeah, website's still really important. Even if you've got social channels, most of the time people will convert through a website. Obviously, for e-commerce, any website is everything. What are things that people need to improve on their websites? Well, I mean, we do these live website teardowns, we call them. Teardowns is an unkind word, but reviews on YouTube every Friday. And most of the time, we don't need to go beyond the homepage. The big question that we end up asking is, what does this business actually do? Who for? And tell us about it in a compelling way. Like, it's the elevator pitch. What's the positioning statement? The one sentence thing that says exactly what you do, who you do it for, and why people should choose you. That is often lacking, right? And even if people think it's clear, that's because they're so familiar with their own business. You put a cold visitor on it and say, you know, run user tests, and you say, what does this website do? And they're like, to know, come up with something completely random, and the website owner is sitting there screaming, thinking, how can you not see it's so obvious? But actually, it's not obvious, because it's like paragraph 5 beyond a bunch of rubbish that you've got there. So that's the first thing. Just be really clear about what you're doing, the benefits of using you. The second thing to think about is, what's the next step that you're wanting people to take on your website? So every site should have a call to action. The goal of every single page on your site is to generate a lead or sale. So what is that next step? So for Exposure Ninja, another reason that we've grown is we've always had this free website and marketing review. So if anybody comes into our world from anywhere, we say, right, go and request your free website and marketing review. Our team will spend half an hour looking at your site. They'll turn this into a 15-minute video, which shows you how to improve the volume of leads and sales that you're generating, the traffic channels that you can be using, what your competitors are doing poorly that you can exploit, what they're doing well that you can copy. We'll send this over to you within 2 working days. It's completely free of charge. It's amazing. So every single page on our website is optimized for that free website and marketing review. Everything that you do, any way you come within 10 meters of us, we're going to be saying, go and request the website review. And then that is the first stage of our sales process. So obviously we're a service business. So that's a process that works really well for a service company, is to have some sort of lead gen bait, which is the start of the sales process. But for an e-commerce business, you know, what we've noticed now is that the world is moving to a stage where you have to incentivize the first purchase. So it's every time you go on a site that knows what they're doing, typically you'll be met with a pop-up that says 15, 20% off your first order into your email, right? And it's the same thing. They're generating leads. They're not just requiring the person to make a purchase in order to come into your world and start owning that relationship. So yeah, that's the biggest thing. Most people's websites are just like a business card taped to a bus shelter. It's just total rubbish. It's basically, here's what we do, and then hopefully someone's going to get in contact. Some people will, most people won't. So you need something there which incentivizes them, makes them go, yeah, do you know what? That's really useful. Let's go and get that. And then that is the slippery side which leads them to you.
Love it, mate. Love it. What a great way to sum it up. What's been the biggest challenge that you've experienced growing Exposure Ninja?
The biggest challenge I've experienced growing Exposure Ninja has been if you'd have told me, like, last month we spent 320k, and when I was a drummer, I remember making 4k a year, right? And there's a growth process that has to happen in order for that to not feel intimidating. And the growth process is painful. Because I have to become a completely different person to what I was in 2018, to what I was in 2016, to what I was in 2014. I'm now surrounded by an incredible management team that are better at almost everything than me, and I need to make sure I still have value. So if I don't want to be one of the, you know, those slugs, the curmudgeonly old men who's like, no, we do things my way around here, I need to be super, super hot, and I need to get better at things that I'm not necessarily good at, like management, like leadership. So it's not really one challenge I've had to overcome, but it's just the growth that's required of a leader of a business as it scales is quite incredible, really. And it's exhausting as well, but it's good fun. And I think nothing is more addictive than improvement.
All right, love it. I think that's something that I'm 100% experiencing at the moment in terms of like stepping out of my comfort zone from being the person that does everything to suddenly having like people that I have to manage and go, oh my God, like what am I doing? And like almost keep just trying to keep the head above water, so to speak, as you go through that. So like scaling process, it's amazing. It's like completely blows my mind in terms of what we're doing right now. Like got a team of 13 people sitting out there and I'm like, oh, what are we going on? They listen to this as well, so get back to work if you listen to this.
Yeah, it's like when you're, you know, if you're walking along a curb and then all of a sudden you think, like, oh, try not to fall, then you're like, whoa. As soon as you start thinking about it, you're like, whoa. You know, when the pandemic struck and I'm like, we got 100 people and their families that are relying on basically me. Ultimately, it's my responsibility to get us through this. I'm not doing it on my own, but ultimately it comes down to me. And you think like, yeah, this is not insignificant. And sometimes there's just that little moment, like when I see the bank statement, I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, right. I have moved on. Like it really hits you. We had a moment today. Yeah, I'm not going to talk about that. Carry on. Yeah, it's been an experience.
I mean, what's next for you? Like, what's the plan of attack for the next 12 months? Where are you looking to get to? Is it growth? Are you stabilizing? What's kind of like the plan for Exposure Ninja and Tim as an individual?
Yeah, so our goal as a company, by the end of 2023, we want to be the UK's best digital marketing agency for SMEs. Best is a very kind of ambiguous, airy-fairy term. So what we've done is we've identified 6 criteria, which have metrics assigned to all of them, based on our values, which tell us what the best agencies in our space are. Then we've taken the top agencies that we're competing against in the country, put everyone in a league table, and then every quarter we go through all of the metrics. How do we define what best is? So it's like things like customer reviews, it's things like visibility, employee satisfaction, all those types of things. Revenue and profit is another one. So our goal is to be the best in the UK by the end of 2023. My personal goal is to do whatever I can to get us there. So I don't have any, you know, I don't have my own personal branding goals or anything like that. Like I say, I am a slave. I am a worker for Exposure Ninja. I will do whatever it takes to get us there. And it's probably going to be leadership and pushing people to be better than they ever thought they could possibly be. That'll probably be top of my agenda for the next 12 months.
I love it, mate. And normally this is the point where I ask for like social media handles and all that sort of thing. But the website review, I think, will definitely be of interest for a lot of people. Where can they get access to that? And how can they get access to you and your awesome team?
Yeah, so if you just go to exposureninja.com or type Exposure Ninja anywhere, like YouTube, we're very active. We're active pretty much everywhere. So just go and search Exposure Ninja. We got a podcast as well. But the website review is a really good thing to do. We'll give you some honest feedback about your website, your digital marketing strategy, and show you some quick wins that you can improve through as well. So exposureninja.com, just click the big call to action button. Hopefully you shouldn't be able to miss it because our entire website is built to drive you to that call to action, as any good website should be.
Do you imagine if you go to it now and it just doesn't work, you'd be like, is this guy even real?
Mate, it happens. It happens. Our site goes down just like anybody else's do, and the DMs are not pretty.
Imagine, mate. I can imagine. But I appreciate your time. I appreciate you're a very, very busy guy. Tim, absolute pleasure having you on the podcast, mate. Look forward to catching up with you soon.
Thanks, Chris. Always a pleasure. And keep smashing it. I love following you and I love following your stuff. So real pleasure and on.
Pleasure, mate. See you soon.